Hello.
This talk is going to be a little different. Just a warning, it is kind of unpleasant at times. not as many jokes as the last two. I suppose I should introduce myself also. I'm Lindsay Blackwell. I'm a PhD student at the University of Michigan School of Information, where I study trolling, online harassment, and other forms of misbehavior in online spaces. As I said, this talk can be troubling at times. We won't get to this until later in the talk, and I will try not to belabor these points, but we will see some adult language, some discussions of rape, and some pretty vivid descriptions of physical and sexual violence. But first, I want to talk about trolls. So trolls are actually one of my favorite things to talk about, mostly because I'm surrounded by them all of the time. So most of my friends are trolls. My parents are huge trolls. I suspect that's true. They will confirm. I suspect many of you in the audience are here because you're taking a class with my advisor, Cliff Lampe, who is also a huge troll. So this is a fun topic for me. The only real problem with trolling is that oftentimes we conflate it with more serious forms of online harassment and abuse, which is what I'm here to talk about today. So the word troll, in its original sense, is actually derived from a fishing practice in which a baited line is drawn very slowly through the water in the hopes of attracting a bite. So in the context of online communities, you might think of this as an inside joke of sorts. It's a way for users to make newcomers feel foolish and to waste their time while cueing in the more established members of the community or more perceptive users that this is a joke and something that they're in on. So this is the original definition of troll. This comes from the Usenet's Trollers FAQ, which was published 20 years ago in 1996. And you can see the definition here says that the well-constructed troll is a post that induces lots of newbies and flamers to make themselves look even more clueless than they already do, while subtly conveying to the more savvy and experienced users that it is in fact a deliberate troll. So as we see in this definition, if you don't fall for the joke, you get to be in on it. Trolls are funny, or at least they're intended to be. Your mileage may vary, but typically they are. It's a way for users to indicate their position in a community and also a way for newcomers to start learning the rules and norms of the space that they're in. So Ken M., who some of you may have heard of, is a great example of a classic internet troll. So Ken M. has been trolling commenters, news sites, and brand pages since 2011, and here he's commenting on a Yahoo News article about the presidential debates. So Ken says, "Need to close the Electoral College and make all their professors work real jobs for a change." There's some jokes, there's just not a lot of jokes. David, poor David, takes the time to say, "It's not that kind of college, $%%." They have electors, not professors. Didn't you ever have civics class? To which Ken M. responds, "If they're not real professors, they shouldn't be teaching our young people in the first place." See, trolls are funny. The second point I want to make is that trolls are harmless. If you do find yourself subjected to a true internet troll, like poor David in the previous slide, this amounts to little more than a waste of your time. Another great example of classic internet trolling is the Photoshop troll. So in a Photoshop troll, a user will come to a forum asking for help editing a photo. So maybe they need help cropping an image or adjusting the color or removing an obstacle. And when people troll this type of request, you might see things that are not along those lines. So this specific user has posted a selfie and he's asking if someone can help remove the white spots in the mirror. So this is the photo that he received. For those of you who can't see in the back, they just Photoshopped a bottle of Windex into his hand. Yeah, these are good trolls. So the reason that I'm going through this is because it's really important that we distinguish classic internet trolling from more serious forms of abuse and harassment. As we've seen, trolling is funny and it's harmless, and when we equate online harassment and targeted abuse with trolling, all we do is undermine the harm that they cause. So what I'm gonna do now is walk through some more serious types of abuse online. We're gonna go through them in order of severity, so if you get uncomfortable, know that there's more uncomfortable stuff coming. But the reason that this is important is, for me, in my research, I think it's important to look at each of these types of behaviors as different sides of a problem. So they're not all the same. And that's important so that we can find better technical and social ways to address these problems. So we're not treating them all like they're the same. Up first is flaming. And the best and most succinct way that I can explain flaming is to look at Donald Trump. So that's what we're gonna do. Donald Trump's Twitter feed is rife with instances of flaming. This particular instance, Mr. Trump, says that the writer of Modern Family is a moron, really boring. He has the mind of a very dumb and backward child. It's important to note that this was not instigated by anything in particular. It appears Mr. Trump was simply watching this show and felt it necessary to say this. who knows? Danny Zucker, the creator and writer of Modern Family, said, "Donald Trump doesn't like the show I work on, but then we've never tested well with the racist, hypocritical, multiple bankruptcy demo." to which Donald Trump says, "Danny Zucker is a lightweight moron who only gets attention by attacking Trump." So to summarize, flaming is the use of baseless insults or other inflammatory language intended to make the target angry and sort of rile them up. So I have a short video to demonstrate flaming in action. Sorry, more Trump.
Well, we have some of the dumbest leaders in the world. We have losers. We have losers.
They're losers. They're just losers.
We have very stupid people.
We have stupid leadership. How stupid are our leaders? How stupid are these politicians to allow this to happen? How stupid are they? Hillary Clinton was the single worst Secretary of State in the history of this country. The world collapsed around us while she was Secretary of State.
I have just one word for Mr. Trump. Basta. Enough!
I think Jeb is a nice person. He's very low energy. I'm not used to that kind of a person.
So he's doing this to inflame and to incite and to get to draw attention, which is seems to be his organizing principle of his campaign.
It's going to be real weird giving this talk if he's elected president. So as Jeb Bush said in that video, the goal of flaming is to inflame, to incite, or to draw attention. So again, these are baseless insults. They're just designed to make people angry. And although flaming doesn't often escalate to more severe outcomes for victims, it is very unpleasant to read. It is just not very nice. Which brings us to our next type of behavior, which is a little more sinister. And this is identity deception. So you may be familiar with identity deception as catfishing, which is the practice, thank you, this is very cute, way cuter than an actual catfish, trust me, I Googled. So catfishing is the practice of creating a false or deceptive online identity, usually with the goal of tricking a user into creating an emotional or romantic relationship with you. So we see this a lot, there's an MTV show about it. But identity deception can actually be even more sinister than that. So earlier this fall, an online friend of mine who knows that I researched online harassment and abuse sent me a private message and asked if I knew anyone at Instagram, and I didn't. And she explained that she had been trying to get an account deleted for several months now. The account on Instagram was private and locked, but they were using her pictures from her Twitter account. Every time she uploaded a picture, basically, it would appear on this Instagram account. So these were selfies, these were pictures of her in compromising attire, these were even pictures of her with her younger sister. And the only reason that she even knew that this account existed was because one of her friends happened to stumble across this on Instagram, recognized the avatar, and added the account. So this is a locked account. My friend can't actually see it. Every time she requests it, she gets denied. Obviously, this person knows who she is and is doing this intentionally to terrify her. And eventually, Instagram recognized her request and deleted the account. And within a day, another account popped up in its stead. So she's still going through this process with Instagram. Every time an account gets deleted, she and her friends go looking for new accounts. And at this time, there's really nothing that she can do besides working with Instagram to find and delete these accounts. Very difficult to find them. She's made all of her other social media accounts private, and she's trying to control her Twitter followers so that only people she knows offline are following her there. So that might seem like good common sense and good privacy practice to many of you in the room, but for those of you who use Twitter to socialize, like I do, you recognize how disruptive that can be to your enjoyment of the site. Next, and worse, I'm sorry, maybe I should have organized this backwards, is doxing. So doxing is the practice of researching and broadcasting personally identifiable information about an individual. So something like an address or a phone number, right? Here, in this example, actress and gamer Felicia Day, who you may be familiar with from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and other things, she was doxed in an internet forum after posting a blog post about Gamergate and its effects on female gamers and gaming culture generally. It wasn't a very inflammatory blog post. It was just on her personal blog, just some thoughts and feelings she was having. And as a result of posting this, she was doxed. So her address was posted publicly. You can see, thankfully, that the comment underneath it is another user expressing that this behavior is not wanted in this particular forum. And this last user says, "Crap, I normally post with my real name, but given this, no chance here." So you can see the sort of chilling effects that these types of behaviors have, not just for the victims, but for the communities that they occur in as a whole. So now this user who frequents this community is changing their posting behaviors because this is so alarming and disturbing, they don't want it to happen to them. I have another example, which is somewhat of a controversial one, and I'd be interested in hearing some of your thoughts after the talk. So this is Rouge V. Some of you may be familiar with him. He is a figurehead in the pickup artist community, and he runs a website called Return of Kings. He's written 15 different books advising men on how they can have sex with women. He believes, and these are direct quotes from two of his most popular posts, he believes that women must have their behavior and decisions controlled by men, and has advocated for the legalization of rape if done on private property. I'm not making this up. These are direct quotes from his website. So Roosh advocates for some objectively vile beliefs. I can say that objectively. It's gross. But earlier this year, when Roosh had tried to organize sort of national meetups for followers of his website, Return of Kings, there was supposed to be one in Ann Arbor. You might have seen some of the news coverage. There was a lot of outrage. So people reacted very strongly. And one of the tactics that people used to sort of demonstrate that they weren't okay with Roosh and what he's trying to accomplish is that they doxed him. So they published his address and his phone number, which also happens to be his mother's address and phone number. I know that reads like a joke, but see both the joke side and the horrible side. This poor woman not only has to deal with this dude as a son, but now her address is published publicly for everyone to see. So this is tough. This was a tough one for me because a lot of the same people that I see sort of speaking out against online abuse and online harassment were the same people who were reveling in sharing this just because Roosh is so... thank you. That is the word. Why is that okay? Why is that seen as okay by some people? And are there instances in which sometimes people deserve to be harassed online? Which brings us to number four, public shaming. Who remembers Justine Sacco? I see like five hands, cool. So Justine Sacco, now you might remember her. Yeah, it's that one. In December 2013, I'll read it, don't worry, for those in the back. In December 2013, Justine Sacco tweeted the following: "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white." Yeah. Not great, pretty objectively terrible. And while Justine was in the air on her way to South Africa, which is a 20-hour flight, by the way, at least, Sacco's tweet was quickly and publicly condemned by a veritable army of Twitter vigilantes. And shortly after this, it was picked up by tons of different media outlets. So it was in BuzzFeed right away, it was in Gawker and Huffington Post and CNN, everywhere. This woman is still in flight. Obviously not with internet access because she was not deleting the tweet or responding to any of the fervor that was building. The hashtag #HasJustineLandedYet was the top trend on Twitter for the next 20 hours. it was really bizarre to watch, frankly, because it seemed like she had captured the entire internet's attention and the entire internet had decided to condemn this woman for this tweet. Her defenders, though there were few of them, We're quick to point out that Justine Sacco, like the rest of us, was merely mortal, that she's, you know, a living, breathing human who made a mistake. I take some issues with that definition because Justine Sacco actually had a storied history of some pretty awful tweets. I won't read all of these. God, these are bad. As I sit and eat a bagel with lox, I would like to send love to my Jews who are all starving themselves right now. Hashtag hungry, hungry Hebrews. Just to give you a feel for what Justine Sacco is like normally, not just on December 20th, 2013. So these are pretty bad. Also, good to point out, Justine Sacco, at the time that she tweeted the Africa tweet, was actually the top public relations executive for IAC, which is the company that owns Daily Beast. They own Vimeo, Match.com, Ask.com. They own pretty much every media company ever. So this woman, more than any other human person, should have a pretty good idea of the outcomes of public discourse. But that being said, regardless of Justine's questionable actions, no one, not even Justine Sacco, deserves the amount of violent threats that were thrown her way and her family's way after she sent this tweet. Public shaming reaches an alarming degree of severity when the entire internet has the ability to get involved. So this isn't 10 or 20 people condemning your actions. This is thousands, hundreds of thousands of people talking about your mistakes. And also, it's important to remember that all of these tweets, blogs, news stories, think pieces, they're all going to stay with Justine Sacco for the rest of her life. They're all, as soon as you Google Justine Sacco, that's all that shows up. So she's stuck with that forever. And here you can see that she tweeted in all caps just the day after, on the 21st of December, "I'm seriously having panic attacks, wondering if someone is going to harm one of my family members. My life is ruined already. Are you happy?" How's everybody doing? These are just some tiny goats wearing pajamas, just to cheer everybody up. If you're way in the back and you can't see these tiny goats, I really recommend that you Google them immediately, because we are about to head into the depressing part of the talk. I know, that wasn't the depressing part. Sorry? No, it gets worse. I wish. Okay, so everyone's good, had a morale boost, cool. Now, and finally, I promise, we're going to talk about targeted harassment. So when we think about online harassment, this is usually what we mean. This is when a group of people will usually target one individual. So often victims of targeted harassment have participated in something controversial, so like Ruche, as we saw, or folks who have spoken out against Gamergate. And proponents of the opposite point of view will band together and employ sometimes several of the tactics that I've discussed in a targeted attack on one or a few individuals in an attempt to, in an attempt to frighten or silence their victims. So this is Amanda Todd. Some of you may have heard of her also, what many people would refer to as cyberbullying. So this is a hot topic right now for teens, high schoolers, really all adolescents and young people. What most people would call cyberbullying, I would talk about as targeted harassment, and that's really what it is. This is Amanda Todd. When Amanda was 13 years old, she used video chat software to make friends, as many of us did as teens, use different types of online programs to talk with people we didn't know. And after a full year of trying, an adult man, a stranger that she had been talking to on this platform, convinced her to show him her breasts. So she did, and you can probably guess what happened next. He took a screenshot and circulated it around the internet, mostly not in places where it would get back to her friends and peers, but still in a way that she was aware that this photo was being shared. And she started experiencing a lot of depression and anxiety as a result of it. Then, a full year after this happened, a Facebook account was created using this picture of Amanda as the profile image, and it friended every single person at Amanda's school. Yeah. After suffering a lot of abuse and tormenting by her peers at school, Amanda switched schools. And unfortunately, the Facebook account followed. So her parents moved. They moved to a totally different city, hoping that Amanda would finally have a fresh start and could escape this. But every single time that Amanda switched schools, and I forget the total, but I think it was around 7 different switches of schools within a 2-year period, a new Facebook account would appear. And the person perpetrating this behavior continued to switch strategies so that people wouldn't immediately recognize what was happening. So instead of using the picture as a profile photo, they would use a photo of a young high school-aged boy, and they would friend people in the school saying, hey, I'm new to town, I'm starting school, really just looking for friends. And as soon as he'd amassed this friend network, then he would start sharing the photos. So this continued to haunt Amanda for almost 2 years. And in October the following year, when she was 15 years old, she committed suicide. It can be very difficult for law enforcement to intervene in these types of attacks online. It's difficult to trace who exactly is perpetrating this behavior. And when you have sort of a collective group of harassers targeting one individual, that's even tougher to track and police. This example behind me, and I won't read this out loud, some of you in the front row can probably see that there are a lot of descriptions of physical and sexual violence. This is a series of 8 tweets that were sent to Brianna Wu, who is a game developer and one of the primary targets of Gamergate. I don't even really know how to explain this. So these are 8 tweets that were sent in a span of 5-6 minutes, not a very long amount of time. At the end of this series of tweets, some of you may see that the very last tweet says, guess what, bitch? I now know where you live. You and Frank live at, and it's blurred out. So at the very end of this slew of vile tweets, she's doxxed. So like I said, oftentimes, a combination of these abusive strategies show up, especially when you're looking at a targeted campaign. So this is, like I said, 8 tweets spanning 6 minutes. Now imagine that this is happening not just by one user. This is happening by hundreds, sometimes thousands of users just attacking you. And it's not just 8 minutes of tweets. It's hours of tweets, it's days, sometimes it's months. And now imagine that you go to the police, because what else would you do? You go to the police and imagine that you're told that they can't do anything to help you in this case, or even worse, and this has happened to many, many victims who have tried to report the harassment specifically on Twitter, imagine being asked, what's Twitter? Now, just for something a little less cheery, I'm so sorry, I'd like to play a few minutes from a recent This American Life podcast with Lindy West. So Lindy West was a former reporter with Jezebel. She experienced tremendous online harassment for simply expressing an opinion about whether or not jokes about rape are ever okay. A lot of people didn't like her opinion about this matter, and she had a particularly egregious troll. They're calling it a troll here, but I would call it a targeted harasser, who created a Twitter account using an avatar of her father. That might sound bad enough. Her father had recently passed away. So this person created a Twitter account using a picture of her dead dad and tweeted at Lindy as if he were her dead dad. So I'll play you a few minutes. I won't belabor this, but I think it's a great episode.
Women get way more malicious messages, and they're way more likely to be stalked online or sexually harassed. Lindy West is a writer who's written for a lot of places like Jezebel and GQ and The Guardian. Her work is online, so she is very familiar with internet trolls. And she has our story. Quick warning to podcast listeners, from this point forward, we are not going to beep anything in today's show. If you prefer a beeped version of our show, you can find that at our website, thisamericanlife.org. Here's Lindy.
One midsummer afternoon in 2013, I got a message on Twitter from my dead dad. I don't remember what it said exactly, and I didn't keep a copy for my scrapbook, but it was mean. And my dad was never mean, so it couldn't really be from him. Also, he was dead. Just 18 months earlier, I'd watched him turn gray and drown in his own lungs, so I was like 80% sure. And I don't believe in heaven, and even if I did, I'd hope to God they don't have fucking Twitter there. It's heaven. Go play chocolate badminton on a cloud with Jerry Orbach and your childhood cat. But there it was, a message. Some context. In the summer of 2013, in certain circles of the internet, comedians and feminists were at war over rape jokes. Being both a comedy writer and a committed feminist killjoy, I weighed in with an article in which I said that I think a lot of male comedians are careless with the subject of rape. Here's just a sample of the responses I got on social media. A quick warning, these are internet comments. about rape, so it's gonna suck. I love how the bitch complaining about rape is the exact kind of bitch that would never be raped. Holes like this make me want to commit rape out of anger. I just want to rape her with a traffic cone. No one would want to rape that fat, disgusting mess. Kill yourself. I want to put an apple into that mouth of yours and take a huge stick and slide it through your body and roast you. That big bitch is bitter that no one wants to rape her. It went on like that for weeks. It's something I'm used to. I have to be. Being insulted and threatened online is part of my job. Which is not to say it doesn't hurt. It does. It feels, well, exactly like you'd imagine it would feel to have someone call you a fat cunt every day of your life.
So the reason that I'm showing you this is not to depress you horribly, but because I think it's important to know what a lot of internet users and a lot of female internet users, a lot of minority internet users are experiencing. And this isn't a rare occurrence. This isn't something that's happening, you know, every so often. It's something that's happening all of the time. And you might see news stories that pop up, but I don't really feel like we're capturing the full extent of what's happening online. This is not trolling. This is not something that you can get away from by just logging out of your computer, by not feeding the trolls. This is harassment. It's violence, and it's very, very difficult to control. If you are interested in this topic, I really encourage listening to the rest of this episode, because actually the person who created the account pretending to be Lindy's dead father actually reached out and apologized and came on NPR to have a discussion with her, which is, as you can imagine, highly unusual, very, very interesting discussion. So why does this matter? And more importantly, why am I telling you? I didn't come here tonight just to let you know that horrible things are happening on the internet. I think we all have a pretty good idea that that's happening. But I came here in the hopes of clearing up a few common misconceptions about this topic. First, the internet is real life. I am so sick of people saying, oh, well, in real life, and my friends in real life, and this, that, this, and the other, in real life. The internet is real life. For many of us, it's where we make a living. It's where we make friends. It's where we live our lives. It's an extension of our lives. And so by telling victims of online harassment to log off, to just shut your computer, don't feed the trolls, those kinds of things aren't helpful because they don't work. And that's another reason why I think it's extremely important to differentiate trolling from these types of abuse. Second, social media is not making us meaner. And I know that sounds counterintuitive based on everything that you've seen here tonight, but the fact of the matter is, it's not social media's fault. Humans suck. We have always sucked. We have sucked since we first existed. We've waged wars and killed a lot of people and broken hearts and done a lot of really awful things. So this is not new. What is new is that technology has the ability to amplify our behaviors, and that means both our best and worst behaviors. And that's why design matters. Design matters a lot. So affordances like coordination and broadcastability and persistence and anonymity can all enable more of these types of behaviors happening on different online communities and platforms. And the reason that's important and the reason I'm bringing it up now is so that the designers in the room or those of you who work in similar spaces, I really implore you to think about the designs that you're creating and think about the affordances that you're building into these systems to allow users and platforms to better regulate behavior. Next, you matter. All of you matter. In order to truly prevent online abuse, it's not just about design. It's not just about the technical systems and the way that we're using them. We can't just take anonymity out of the equation and think that we're going to fix everything. And we lose a lot of really great benefits of anonymity along the way. So what's more important is that designers, researchers, policymakers, and users are all working together so that we can build a better and more empathetic web. Because online harassment isn't just a technical problem, it's a social one too. And finally, if you take away anything from my talk tonight, please, please, please remember that trolling is not harassment. Referring to serious forms of abuse, as you've seen, is trolling only undermines the actual harm that these things cause for people both online and off. These have a lot of consequences for their victims, and I really hope that you leave here today understanding that difference and understanding why it's so, so important that we stop telling victims of harassment to not feed the trolls. Thank you, and I'm happy to take your questions.